Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, July 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Once again, we welcome astronomer Bob Berman to our airwaves to answer all of your astronomy-related questions. Bob has worked himself up into quite a lather about the upcoming solar eclipse. It is next month, and it's going to be a full solar eclipse depending on where you are. Bob's excited about that. If you have a question about the eclipse, give us a call or anything astronomy-related, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You may also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. We'll get to a few emails as well, but the number, 800-348-2551. Astronomy with Bob Berman coming up after the news. Well, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We welcome back astronomer Bob Berman to our airwaves today to field all of your astronomy-related questions. Bob is one of the best-known and most widely read astronomers in the whole wide world. His most recent book is Zapped, From Something Else to Something or Other. I forget the subtitle. You always got a subtitle. But it's called Zapped, and we'll find out more in a moment. The number to call if you have a question for Bob Berman is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You may also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But the number is 800-348-2551. Mr. Berman, Zapped is the book. And the subtitle is, I'm told by my assistant producer, From Infrared to X-Rays, The Curious History of Invisible Light. How's that book working out for you? The check's rolling in?
It won't even be officially released until August.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So we're learning
the
about
copy, it. The copy that I gave you was for people like you, for reviewers and critics.
Why I'm waiting to read it. I'd like to wait until it's officially out.
Kirkus wrote a nice review.
I saw that. That was very nice indeed. Yeah. So you're excited about that, and you're excited about the eclipse.
Oh, I'm so excited by the eclipse.
Why?
Well, because of all the previous eclipses that I've led groups to, which is 7, and all over the world, the Libyan desert, Australian, et cetera, and now it's right here in America. And it's the first time in 38 years. Wait a minute, 38 or 39? It was 1979. So that's
38 years. And you have seen solar eclipses before.
Oh, yeah. And they're just the best spectacle. And I can't get through to most people. I hate to say it. Like, we'll tell people, you've got to see that. And I think they think that, oh, that's an astronomer talking. He's just excited about that. But if I said instead that of all the things you want to see in your life, maybe the Great Pyramids at Giza, maybe the Eiffel Tower, that this outdoes them all. It makes people weep. It makes animals go crazy. People still think, well, it's just another celestial event. They don't realize that, first of all, you see flames coming out of the edge of the sun, deep, hot pink flames.
Yeah.
You see the sun's atmosphere, its corona, delicate, wispy, filamentary, stringy lines that go across a lot of the sky, far further than people think. A little bit like those when we put iron filings on a piece of paper when we had a magnet under
when
we were kids, and it would form the shape of the magnetic
field.
Well, just like that, there's the sun's magnetic field, except now you can see it. And it's so fantastic. People weep. People go crazy because it's beyond what we normally see. And it has that 2001 A Space Odyssey thing of the moon actually visibly moving slowly, and then covering up the sun and all three bodies in a straight line. So it's far beyond the aurora borealis, which itself can be great. It's far beyond a great comet or great meteors. But a lot
did you weep the last time?
No, actually I didn't. But no. I saw people weep. And people think it's going to be here. We've spoken to people. Are you going to go and see it? And they say, oh, yeah, sure. I'm going to see it from Rhinebeck.
Yeah, Mechanicville, sure.
Yeah, because they're thinking eclipse, and they've read that it'll be a 75% eclipse from here. And instead, I wish people would think totality, because all these amazing things only happen during a total eclipse. Partial eclipse, honestly, it's just so-so. And you need eye protection. And nothing special happens. Stars don't come out in the daytime. Another mistake people make is they think the excitement that the thing they're looking for is darkness in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
But darkness is no big deal. I mean, you know, don't pay your electric bill.
Right, or work
go,
at night.
Or go into a closet. You know, darkness. Sure. And totality is not even very dark. It's actually about as bright as a full moon night. So it's not the darkness. It's the thing that's happening in the sky. And you only see that by traveling. Inconvenient, you got to travel, or you could wait 7 years and then an eclipse is coming right here to our listening area.
Really?
Or pretty close.
Not in Albany.
Not in Albany, but Syracuse, Rochester, Buffalo, Burlington.
Oh, perfect. So I'll wait 7 years and go to Burlington.
Yeah. And do that. By then,
if
kids,
I live.
By then, the kids will have left home and married like some jerk,
right?
And you don't want to wait for that. You want to take them now when they're still kids,
okay.
And they'll be excited.
All right, fair enough. And you know, we're approaching a solar minimum. Will that affect the corona that we see if we go to see?
See, he knows these things. He knows these things. Yes, it does affect it because when it's sunspot maximum versus minimum, it's as if the sun's magnetic field is either holding itself in or letting itself go. At a time, some parts of the solar cycle, the corona, the sun's atmosphere, those stringy things that I was talking about, the sun's magnetosphere, form kind of a circle around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
But at other times in the cycle, around the equator, it goes far into space, and all that comes out of the top and the bottom of the sun are like straight, curvy lines, stringy lines. So, yes, it changes its appearance depending upon the part of the sunspot cycle. That's just really fantastic. And right, the hotels are all sold out now.
Right.
The tours are all booked up. It's too late for a lot of it, but it's not too late to fly to a place like Nashville where it'll be total, or Carbondale, Illinois, or Casper, Wyoming, or just go to Denver, rent a car, and then drive north for a couple of hours.
And just hang out by the Howard Johnsons, right?
Or drive into the track of the eclipse in that morning. You don't have to sleep there.
You make a point.
And I've learned that Walmart is liberal about letting people park in their parking lot if you're not a customer.
Good heavens, Bob.
Worst comes to worst, and the library lawns are all filled up. I like cemeteries, by the way, as spots to watch eclipses.
People are dying to get in there. Thank you very much. I'll be here all week.
Because they're not very forested. They have good views of the sky.
Yeah.
They're not crowded. People don't think of cemeteries. So
you might want to consult your municipal authorities before you go hanging around a cemetery.
Probably. You know, call up the local police, say, I'd like to watch the eclipse from there. Is there a problem with it? And they'll probably say, sure, if you're only going to go in for half an hour, don't knock anything over.
Yeah.
Those are good. But if worse comes to worst, and you drive into the path of totality that morning, and it seems too crowded and you can't find a place, mall parking lots, like places like Walmart, they won't mind if you pull into a part of that big empty lot and just park there and watch the sun.
Too many lights, though. They all have lights throughout the lots.
I wonder if the lights will come on during the
eclipse. Oh, interesting. Well, let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551. Mr. Bob Berman is here. His new book is Zapped from something. Well, you'll get the subtitle when you get the book. Stuart in Crippled Bush. Crippled Bush, where's that, Stuart?
It's near Accord in Stone Ridge.
All right, you're on, man. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm speaking as someone who does appreciate eclipses. I drove to the Gaspé Peninsula in 73, I think, to look at a total eclipse, and it was stunning, absolutely.
And you got clear weather for that? It was clear enough?
No. I was taking photographs, and I have the occlusion of the disc image on a negative someplace, but it got cloudy before totality. But what I remember was the way darkness fell in sort of like a curtain coming down in steps. It was a very strange perception. And then all the seagulls flew out to the St. Lawrence Seaway from where we were camped out along a river. And it was just very, very interesting. When you said the animals freaked out, that's what I always tell people about it, that the birds really thought something unusual was occurring.
I'm really so glad you went there. I've always heard that was generally cloudy, that 73 eclipse in that area. So I'm glad you had a great experience there.
It was cool. So here, my question has to do with not the near effects of the sun, but the most remote effects of the sun. And it comes from having just finished the audio book of Neil deGrasse Tyson's Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. And there was one point as I was listening where he said something, and I thought, wait a second, could that be true? Now, far be it from me to question Neil deGrasse Tyson about anything having to do with astrophysics, but here is what he said, Bob, and I'd like your thought on this. He said that the Oort cloud extends halfway to the next star, and that's 2 light years, I think, approximately. How could the gravitational effects of the sun operate 2 light years out?
That's a great question.
Well, yeah, it's a great question. Of course, gravity, as you know, never goes to zero. It falls off inversely with the square of distance. So there is still gravity out there. And, you know, Planet Nine, that's been hypothesized based on the behavior of 6 strange objects in the Kuiper Belt.
Yep.
I know you know about that, too.
We're
hypothesizing that there might be a giant planet, and we're talking about 10,000 AUs from the next star. Now, 64,000 AUs makes a light year, so that's pretty darn far. So there still is gravity out there. It's just that it becomes very, very weak.
Okay.
Could you extend from that understanding or extrapolate that between any two stars, there is an Oort cloud that extends to the 50% mark between those two stars, that
no.
Everything is somehow in some gravitational field of a particular nearby object, and by extension, other objects too, I guess, too.
I don't know if it's valid to extrapolate from our own system to that one. And for people who don't know what the Oort cloud is, that is a region, a spherical region of hypothesized bodies, comet, a reservoir of comets that could get pulled in, icy bodies that goes much further than the nearer reservoir of those called the Kuiper Belt that Pluto is part of.
Yeah.
Pluto's even within the Kuiper Belt. The Oort cloud goes much farther. So our caller is wondering if every star has that. The answer is I don't know, really.
Let's take a break here. Thank you for that one. We appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Bob Berman is here. We'll be back.
Support comes from Bassett Healthcare, providing information on partial knee replacement at educational seminars across Central New York. Say no to kneepain.com for dates and locations. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Lakeview Orchard and Farm Stand, 94 Old Cheshire Road, Lanesboro, Massachusetts. You pick cherries, raspberries, currants, blueberries, homemade donuts, pies, pastries, kapusta, galumpki, and pierogi. LakeviewOrchard.com. Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information. And Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York. A plastic surgeon dedicated to aesthetic cosmetic surgery, fat transfers, facial rejuvenation, breast augmentation, and laser and skin care since 1996. 518-786-1700.
All right, Bob, who's that sax player, you know?
Who?
Coleman Hawkins. You knew that.
I like it.
Right?
I didn't know it, but I like it.
Okay, it's 21 minutes after 2 o'clock. This is Vox Pop. Astronomer Bob Berman. His knowledge of music, not that extensive, but his knowledge of astronomy is fantastic. And the new book is Zapped, from to Ultraviolet to something or other. And you can find Zapped in August at your local bookstore. These came in via email, Bob, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one is from Ken. What is your estimated time frame for NOVA of contact binary KIC 9832227?
Well, I think the thinking is that within a few decades, it should be a red type of NOVA, a rare type of NOVA. It's certainly very
exciting. Can you explain
exciting.
To those who don't know what binary KIC 9832227 is?
The KIC is just the designation of a star, and once before in the constellation of Scorpius, we had this happen where two stars were orbiting each other so closely that the their period was decreasing, and it was calculated that they would actually merge. And they did. And the merging of these two smaller stars produced an unstable larger star that actually turned into a super brightening ANOVA.
Okay.
So now it looks like it's going to happen again. I could have told you this at one point, but certainly in the next 15, 20
okay.
years, I'll bet the person remembers the year that it's predicted for, but not too far in the future.
Now, if you're playing along at home, be aware that Bob does not use a device or a computer at all during this program. It's all out of his own head, and you can verify that by watching the program at WAMC.org and click live video. Ken also asks, what is the Algol paradox? A-L-G-O-L.
Algol, also known as Beta Persei, is this wonderful star called Al means the in Arabic.
Right.
Gol means ghoul. So the ancients called it the ghoul, the demon star, and they called it that because it loses half its light every 2 days, 20 hours, and 49 minutes. Happened to remember that because it's very exciting not to look it up ahead of time, but to be walking out on an autumn night and look up and suddenly there's the star Algol, and it's the constellation's shape has changed because one of the two main stars has now dimmed to only half its previous brightness.
And that's the paradox?
No, I've actually never heard the word Algol paradox before.
Do we know why it dims?
Yes, it's an eclipsing binary. It's actually got two stars that are whose plane of orbit is exactly in line with us. So every 2 days, 20 hours, 49 minutes, one passes over the other and dims it.
Bob Berman is our guest today. Our number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And we'll do one more email here before we get back to the phones. This one's from Ray in Gloversville. I heard an interview with Neil deGrasse Tyson. He mentioned that the Earth has precession of about 16,000 years. He mentioned that the astrology calendar was developed several thousand years ago. Today, the constellations have moved 1 month. Please explain why observatories such as Stonehenge still accurately show the first day of summer or winter. Those were built 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, so I'm not sure why those still work correctly and are not affected by precession. And that's from Ray in Gloversville.
Well, they are affected by precession, which is, by the way, 25,780 years on average for the Earth to make one wobble on its axis. What changes with precession is the date when these things happen, not that they will happen or where they'll happen in the sky.
All right, very good.
Where they'll happen is because of the degree of tilt. We actually change the degree of tilt in yet another cycle. We're right now at about the average, 23.5 degrees, famously. That's what we're tilted. But we can go 1 degree more and 1 degree less than that. And that changes where the sun and the moon is in the sky, but only by a degree.
Now, will that change in, say, a billion years? Will it be 2 degrees
a degree? Less than that. You don't even have to do that. That's a matter of some tens of thousands of years
really?
Through the whole cycle. Yeah.
How about that? Yeah. All right. Back to the phones we go. Bob Berman is our guest. 800-348-2551, the number. Randy in Pittsfield. Randy, you're on.
Afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello.
One thing that I learned from the sun's heartbeat is that we have an electrical storm coming someday, and having just put solar on our roof, and we're all electronic these days more and more and more. Have you got some advice on protecting ourselves from
EMP? Hardening for EMP.
Now, you bring up a great point. In 1859, this is the famous thing with Richard Harrington, the British astronomer, who saw the sun, looked up, and saw the sun almost twice as bright as it normally is.
Yeah.
Because there were giant flares that went off. Back then, we didn't have what we have today, the satellites, the grid, the electronics.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, that produced so much electrical activity, this huge input. It wasn't just flares, but also coronal mass ejections, that we had telegraph wires carrying the extra current. It knocked some telegraph operators off their seats, knocked them unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And then it happened again in 1921, only a little less intense, super solar storm that caused a fire in New York City at one of the rail lines. One of the Connecticut rail lines also had a main building burn down. And so, okay, so it's calculated that we don't know how often it happens that we get a super electrical storm like the one our caller is talking about. But obviously it happens. It was 1859, then 1921. In a way, it's almost a century, so we're due for it. And a government panel a few years ago determined that if we get that kind of Carrington event today, A, it would completely destroy our electrical grid. It would cost $4 trillion, well, between $2 and $4 trillion to repair, and it could take years without the country having an electrical grid. So the question is, should we be hardening it? Should we be spending the money to protect ourselves against it? What they characterized as a low probability, high consequence event. Those are the words they use. Low probability in any given year, that is. High consequence. Do you do something about it, or do you just wait for it to happen and then have to deal with it? And so the caller is saying, what can I do about it at home? There's not much I think any of us can easily do. Now, if you have solar panels and you have your own generator and it's off most of the time and then you can turn it on, it'll probably not be affected during the storm itself.
Well, build a Faraday cage around your house.
Ha. That's great. See, that's another thing. So, like Faraday cage worked with direct current, like lightning is, to protect you from getting killed by high voltage, as opposed to a Tesla coil, which you see in museums also. And that can have lightning-like discharges, but that's with Tesla coil uses AC, alternating current instead. You could personally recover from it. But our nation recovering would be another story. So the caller brings up a very, very big issue that so far no one's decided to do anything about.
I have an old tube radio, and I believe tubes would be fine, but there'd be nothing to listen to. And, of course, I'll be out of a job. I'll be standing on the top of a rock screaming when the electromagnetic pulse happens. And I suppose they can pay me for that. Let's go over to Steve in Schenectady. Steve, you're on.
Hi. So probably like 3 weeks ago in Latham, I saw a triple rainbow, and since I'm quite old, and this is the first one I've seen, I have two questions. One is, approximately how often do these occur, and what is the most number? The second question is, what is the most number of rainbows people have seen at once?
Fair enough. First question, how often do they occur? The answer is never. A triple rainbow is impossible, can't happen.
What do you mean?
You saw, and what people often report to be a triple rainbow, the third rainbow that you saw and was, tell me if I'm wrong, inside the primary rainbow, just inside of it, was a series of green and pink, like fringes, bands, one and then another, alternating bands of that are often called the third rainbow. But the reason you can't have an actual rainbow, you have the primary rainbow, okay, we all know that. 9 degrees outside of that is a fainter and with the colors always reversed. Secondary rainbow. Secondary rainbow happens because of a second set of internal reflections within each raindrop. But physics shows us that a third rainbow would have to, which would produce a third set of reflections, would actually occur closer to the sun in a bright part of the sky and be so faint that it should technically not be visible.
Huh.
So unless you saw a third rainbow extremely faint and much closer to the sun, what you probably are talking about is those, ready for the word, supernumerary arcs, which aren't even caused by refraction and reflection the way regular rainbows are, but are caused by diffraction. That is the interference of light rays with other light rays, interference pattern.
Oh, very interesting.
And that's often called the third rainbow.
Is that what you saw, Steve?
Yes, I did realize that under the primary rainbow, which is the one on top, the one underneath it did seem to have reversed colors. I do remember that, and I don't really have good pictures of it. But then down below, there was actually another rainbow.
Yeah, that was it. Those were the supernumerary arcs. Also, next time you see the double rainbow, notice that in between the primary and the secondary bow, the sky is darker than any other part of the sky.
Huh.
There's a dark band in between the two rainbows. This is called, I love this, this is called Alexander's dark band.
Is it like a Is that like a polarization thing, like cool ray glasses in the old days?
It's a place because of the where the raindrops, how the raindrops reflect water. It's a place reflect light. It's a place where less light gets reflected into that region, and it's named not Alexander's Dark Band. Sounds like the song from the
Ragtime Band.
The Ragtime Band, but it's actually named after Alexander of Aphrodisias in 200 A.D., who first pointed out this phenomenon. But if you ever see vivid rainbows enough to see two clear rainbows, definitely look for Alexander's Dark Band in between the two rainbows.
Very interesting. Now, am I remembering, am I making something up from decades ago, or did at one point did I see a rainbow of sorts with grayscale with the moon?
You did.
Okay, I didn't make that up, although I may have.
You know, it's no secret we have like a little quiet visitor in the studio today who has also experienced it as a witness to that.
Hello, quiet visitor, and
quiet. We were just landing our plane. A thunderstorm had just stopped. This was at the Kingston Airport. The moon was a fat gibbous moon, and there was a moonbow, just as you're describing, with the colors very subdued, almost gray, but they were there, but they were pastels. They were very, very light colors. So, yeah, moonbow, same rules apply to a moonbow in that the moonbow will be opposite the moon, just like a regular rainbow is opposite the sun. People wonder, well, if there's a sun shower, which way should I look? Look to your shadow of your head, because every rainbow surrounds the shadow of your head.
Right. It's your own personal rainbow.
Yes. And so 42 degrees from the shadow of your head is the location of the rainbow.
Genius. Yeah. Bob Berman is our guest. 800-348-2551, the number. John in Pittsfield. John, you're on.
Yeah, it's almost 45 years ago it was. It was July 10th, 1972, that Eastern Canadian rainbow. I was in New Brunswick at the start of the day.
Oh, the eclipse?
Yeah, the eclipse. And the forecast on the radio, we didn't have internet back then, was for cloudiness up in the Gaspé. So we headed toward Nova Scotia and did find clear skies overlooking the water between Nova Scotia and Prince Edward Island. The thing that stands out in my mind, besides the thing in the sky, was the speed of the shadow, which you could literally see moving across the water at, I don't know how fast it was. I was wondering if Bob might know how fast that shadow is moving across the land.
Okay, we're going to turn you down a little bit, John. You have a lot of hum on your phone, but we'll keep you here for a follow-up. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, the moon's shadow during an eclipse is 2,290 miles an hour minus the speed of Earth where you're located. Now, that means that if you're on the equator where the Earth is moving the fastest at 1,038 miles an hour, you subtract one from the other to get the net speed of the moon. But if you're very near the poles, or even in
Canada,
Alaska, where you're barely rotating at all, then you'll get that full speed of the moon of almost 2,300 miles an hour. And that will be the speed of the oncoming shadow. But I want to also say that some people look for that eclipse shadow rushing towards you. And I just want to say that it really varies in whether you'll see anything at all, because after all, what that shadow represents is going from a 99.99% eclipse, which is the way things were in the minute before the eclipse, to a 100% eclipse. So it's not like you're going from sunlight to darkness or sunlight to shadow. You're going from an almost full eclipse to that final 0.1% of the eclipse, and that's the shadow that you're seeing. So it's a very small change of brightness. Nonetheless, it is discernible in the right conditions.
John, do you want to follow up here?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that is the real scourge of all eclipse hunters, is actually getting cloud-free skies, and sometimes you just don't luck out.
Are you going to be going to this one coming up?
I'm waiting until 2024.
Okay, and do you know where you're going to see it then? On that one?
Maine.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah, good.
Well, that's a great idea. All right. Well, and when is it in 2024, Bob?
April 8th.
April 8th. All right, John, thank you for the call. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551, the number. We go over to we go to Jim in Adams, Mass. Jim, you're on.
Gay Ray.
Hey.
Good afternoon, Mr. Berman.
Good afternoon.
I was wondering on the previous caller a little while ago, the extra strong solar flares, solar storms. Could putting utility lines underground sufficiently shield our utility line networks from that?
Well, that's a good question. As I understand, in the great event, which was not as bad as the Carrington event in 1859, but the one on March 13th, 1989, which plunged one quarter of Canada into darkness for the same reason, because of giant electrical discharges in generating plants and along the lines, that underground lines were still susceptible depending upon the nature of the rock. And that parts of Canada, I think a quarter of Canada, has the kind of rock that will carry the electrical charges and influence electricity running even in shielded cables within them. But I'm not an expert on this, but I think there'd be some effect, but probably better than if it were just above ground.
All right. Thank you for that.
Thanks a lot, Jim. And, of course, you know, our military, they're always trying to harden things and the event somebody launches a nuke and throws an EMP, and that's the same mechanism, right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what would totally work and what wouldn't, and as you know, I don't want to make up stuff that I don't know the answer to. Maybe our last caller can find out how effective shielding can be.
All right, well, our guest is Bob Berman. Our number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Astronomy Today. We'll be back with the home stretch.
Support comes from Whitney's Farm Market and Country Gardens, Cheshire, featuring We Plant, You Plant garden design service with on-site selection of nursery stock, trees, shrubs, perennials, privacy, hedges, and installation. Whitney'sFarm.com. Round Lake Auditorium, introducing Brian DeWan's songs and film strips performance in a surreal setting using visual arts, music, and stories, July 8th at 8 p.m. RoundLakeAuditorium.org. NatureWorks Organic Land Care, specializing in innovative ecological landscape construction of outdoor living spaces, all-organic food systems, and garden features. Design, installation, and organic maintenance, natureworkslandcare.com. Edgar Bosick, Certified Financial Planner, Private Financial Design, South Hadley, Massachusetts. Your life, your plan, your portfolio. PrivateFinancialDesign.com, securities through Cambridge Investment Research, member FINRA and SIPC. Curtis Lumber, featuring Great American Kitchen, Wellborn Cabinets, and Cambria Quartz Countertops. 100% American-made products by American workers, sold locally by Curtis Lumber. CurtisLumber.com. And Karen Lindstrom, Life Coach, helping people recognize thoughts and behaviors that interfere with personal fulfillment, providing tools to build resilience for life progress. ROMMP.com.
Ah, yes, we're on. Zach, thank you for that. We have a little injury in the studio. I thought we would leave the mic off for a moment, but that's fine. We're back. Yeah, we'll get the blood later. It's Astronomy with Bob Berman. Always an exciting experience. 800-348-2551. You know you've really sacrificed for this program, Berman, when you're bleeding all over the place. It's all right, Zach. He'll live. It's all right. We may need a tourniquet by 258, but that'll be fine. You're okay? Everything all right over there?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Good for you. Boy, you are a trooper. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Joy in Maybrook. Joy, you're on.
Hello. Do you need a nurse? I'm a nurse.
Yes. Yes, we do. Yeah. And a wet bar,
actually. What a coincidence.
Yeah.
And a wet bar. Yeah. I don't have that.
Okay.
Bourbon.
I'm having the same problem. Yeah. The same problem that you had about getting people enthusiastic about it. I think it was you who was talking about it several months ago. I went straight home, made my reservation. My husband is bemused. And no one else seems to get excited about it.
Well, he's been talking about it for years, Joy.
Well, you know why? Because people don't know. It's beyond what you can anticipate. Because you know why? Because we've all seen partial eclipses of the sun, you know, where you need a filter or eye protection. And they're just kind of interesting. Uh-huh. And we've seen lunar eclipses, and they're kind of interesting.
Uh-huh.
And so nobody's prepared for something that's like many orders of magnitude beyond anything we've ever seen before. The total eclipse of, and that's why generally at lecture audiences, I say, has anyone here ever seen a total eclipse? And in a group of maybe 500, we'll get one or two or three because they only happen for any given spot on Earth. They only happen every 360 years.
Right.
So sometimes people say, yeah, I think I saw one back in Albany, maybe in the 70s. And no, the last one in this area was on January 24th, 1925.
Right.
And so they're really rare. And so people don't have experience with them. They have no idea until they see one, and then they get addicted. Then we get people on these tours that come over and over again and ask themselves, where can I see this again?
Where did you say you were going to see this, Joy?
I'm going north of Nashville to Godletsville, a little tiny town that didn't know about it when I made the reservation. I think I remember you saying to stay away from the coast because it's going to be cloudier and your chances are better if you go in the Midwest. And so I'm in southern New York, and we're going to drive. It's going to take 2 days.
Good for you.
And we're going to a afterglow party with a band and a dance club.
Oh, fantastic.
Good for you.
You know, you should have a foreglow before the thing as well.
Did you say the town was...
Well, they have a luncheon.
Was the town called Godletsville?
Yeah, Goodletsville. G-O-O-D-L-E-T-S.
Goodletsville.
And the party is at Gallatin, just northeast of Nashville.
Well, that's so cool. I hope that after you see that, you'll report back on Bob's September appearance, and you guys can share stories.
Oh, sure. That'll be great.
Well, thanks. Enjoy it, Joy. Thank you. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. And I suppose if people are interested in Bob Berman's, you know, you're always leading some flock somewhere. And so how do you find out about what you do?
Oh, I just Google my name and then the word tours, and it'll pop up what we do. My favorite things are seeing the aurora every year from central Alaska. We've got our own secret spots. And the Atacama Desert and the Andes every year in South America, because it's the darkest skies that I've ever seen. The Milky Way casts everyone's shadow.
Well, that's cool.
We all stand in a group and we see our shadows cast by the Milky Way.
So,
you know, some things like that, you don't need special equipment. You just need to get away from the artificial lights of towns and cities, and then it all takes care of itself.
Don't you think, though, there is some danger with all this hoopla about the solar eclipse that people... I mean, when it's not a full solar eclipse, you need to have something to look at the sun.
Oh,
you need eye protection, and people need to remember that. I saw on a website, space.com, they have an article about the best gear to protect yourself when looking at the eclipse.
It's true.
Space.com.
And somebody contacted me in the last year and actually has permanent eye damage from looking at the sun, although he used binoculars to look at the sun.
Well,
so that was like particularly dangerous. But yeah, of course, during the partial part, and there is a partial eclipse for an hour before totality begins. So
you need to have the right stuff.
For that part. And if you can't get anything else, welder's goggles are great. Shade number 14. That'll work.
Okay.
And, of course, these days online.
Is that what you used?
Yeah, I like those because they're optically perfect, and they give a very, very good image, much better than the plastic Mylar does.
All right, and presumably you've used them before, and your eyesight's still good, so that's okay.
Yep.
800-348-2551, the number. Saul in Schenectady. Saul, you're on.
Hi. I guess it was 30 or 40 years ago, I went out to Cape Cod, and it was supposed to be total on Monomoy Point. And when we got there, it turns out you can't get to Bonneville Point without a boat. But where we were, it was 99.9% total. And we saw the waves on the side of a white barn moving upwards rapidly.
Shadow bands.
And what do they call that?
Those are called shadow bands. That was you saw that on March 7th, 1970. That's when Cape Cod had that 99.
And the birds all went crazy because they came flying inland from the dark, and where we were, it was light. So they sat down for a minute and flew back out to sea and then turned around and came back. They did that three or four times. And so they all just sat down and put their wings over their eyes or something. But impressive.
Yeah, and that wasn't even total, as you said. I'm so glad you saw those shadow bands. This is one of the freakiest things, that just before totality, in the minute before totality, over a white surface, you said you saw the side of a white barn, but a sheet spread on the ground or snow or anything that's a white surface will do it. Suddenly, there appears ripply dark lines that look like those ripples at the bottom of a swimming pool when the, you know, when the water's in it, of course. Ripply, moving dark lines that are over all surfaces, and they can't be photographed. If you take a still camera or a video camera of them and you look at the picture later, it comes out without them
on. What causes them?
They're caused by, because the sun's been reduced to a point of light, it causes temperature.
Right, it's like a pinhole camera.
Yes, it's like temperature cells in the atmosphere, little bubbles of cooler and warmer air, bend the light of the, now that the sun's only a pinhole, and produce these ripples. It makes the hairs on your neck stand on edge. It's the eeriest thing.
Very interesting. Saul, thank you for that call. 800-348-2551. Darren in Fort Plain. Darren, you're on.
Yes. First, I don't know if you've answered this question already. When is the solar eclipse, and where do I have the best chance of seeing it closest to me?
Okay.
August 21st is the date, and it'll be close to noon. And the path, if you just look up online, NASA total solar eclipse, you'll get a nice interactive, clickable map. The path of totality goes from the Pacific Northwest, south of Portland, Oregon, crosses over Idaho, Wyoming, southern Illinois, Tennessee, and then exits the country in South Carolina. Over Charleston, it's total over Charleston, it's total over Nashville, it's total over Carbondale. Now, the coasts offer a little bit more of a chance of cloudy weather. But the Pacific Northwest coast, because as we all know, the Pacific Northwest coast is not a great place for clear skies.
Yeah.
And South Carolina as well, because it's humid there in August, as we all know. And the eclipse will be an afternoon eclipse there. It'll be a morning eclipse on the West Coast or late morning, and then an afternoon eclipse in the Carolinas. So the heat of the day will have plenty of time to produce pop-up clouds and thunderstorms and that kind of thing. So, I mean, if you have friends in Charleston or a place to stay and a reason to go there, certainly go there and take your chances. I don't want to discourage you. But if you have a choice or you want to drive there from here, yeah, the more you go inland, go from Nashville and places west of there, I think you'll have more of a chance of clear skies.
All right, Darren, thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Obviously, solar eclipse, a chance to do some science. What will scientists hope to be learning from this one?
Well, we always want to see, number one, the structure in the corona that is normally invisible at any other time. The sun's corona is just gorgeous, either through the eyes of science or just on your own or using binoculars. It's perfectly safe to use binoculars when the sun is totally eclipsed. The corona also has presented a long-time puzzle in that the sun's surface, gaseous surface, its photosphere, is only 10,500 degrees hot. But the corona is 4 million degrees hot. So why does the heat go up as you get away farther and farther from the sun? Does the heat go so high that atoms can't even exist? They're torn apart into just broken bits of atoms. So all you have out there are subatomic particles, which is actually, or plasma as it's called, which is good because only subatomic particles will follow and define the sun's magnetosphere, whereas neutral atoms won't. If there were only neutral, if it was cooler and you had only neutral atoms, you wouldn't see the sun's corona and all those delicate lines. So it's actually very good that this happens, but still a mystery. Why does it happen? And pretty much physicists just in the last few years have settled on that it has to do with a magnetic field having lines that are disconnecting, snapping apart, reconnecting, and that this process is heating up
A lot of kinetic energy there.
Yeah, it's heating up the gases.
Very interesting.
And so it's a magnetic phenomenon.
Interesting. Let's go to Joanna in South Hadley. Joanna, you're on.
Hi. I just wanted to say I was in the Boston Public Library on March 7th, 1970, on the second or third floor, looking down into Copley Square when I thought it was a total eclipse at the time, came through. And how eerie and just, I will never forget it, watching the bright, bright shadows just disappear and everything go into this twilight dark state. It was brief, but I was told it was a total solar eclipse.
No, not from there. Unfortunately, the closest place to totality from where you were would have been the island of Nantucket.
Okay. Well, it certainly was memorable, and yes. I will consider trying to see the next one.
Oh, please do. Go. Absolutely go. Go. I know it's inconvenient. Get in the car and just take the family and go.
Yeah, just go.
Yeah.
Was there anything approaching totality in Western Mass sometime in the 50s? Because I remember my father getting these sheets of Polaroid film putting them together and us viewing them through these Polaroid
October 2nd, 1959. We had almost total eclipse. Right. It was total in Boston.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, I was in Western Mass and got a chance to see that one, too. Very exciting, and thank you for the show.
Thanks a lot for the call. And over to Cindy and Troy. Cindy, you're on.
Hi. Being a regular listener to the show, I heard that we're supposed to get the number 14 glass. My kids are heading to Nashville, and I went to a welding supply store, and all they had was the number 12. And they said, no, you only need the 12. We don't even sell the 14. Maybe you can get the 14 online. What's the deal, 12 or 14?
No, well, I've got good news for you. Did you buy the 12?
Yeah.
Good.
I did, but I don't care. Whatever, I'll buy the 14. I just want the right thing.
Okay, here's the thing. Every previous eclipse, I've used a 12, and we've distributed 12 to all the members of our tour. In our astronomy tours, and our vision is perfectly fine. And also, we at Astronomy Magazine had an eye specialist evaluate it, and he came away saying that the 12s and the 14s shades are equally protective of eyesight.
Oh, interesting.
So the only difference is that the view through a 12 shows a brighter solar image, but still safe, and the 14 has a dimmer solar image. So I've come away concluding that when the sun eclipse is lower in the sky and the sun is a little less bright, I prefer the 12 because it gives a little bit of a brighter image.
Mm-hmm.
And when the sun is high up, as it will be this time, I prefer the 14 to make the sun's image a little less bright. However, I've even tried a 12 recently, this past week. In fact, I used one of my 12s just to see, well, how bright really is it when the sun is high? And it's fine. And it certainly won't hurt your eyes, and you can tell the kids it's fine.
Okay. And Cindy, I did find when I was looking around before the program, if you go to space.com, right at the top of the page, there is a slideshow of 20 of the best gadgets to view the eclipse through. So you can check that out as well.
Cool.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for the call. Over quickly now.
Hey, good luck. Can you go with them?
What?
No, the caller. Can you go with your kids?
Oh, well, I hope she does.
I hope Cindy
gets back to us. Yeah. Barry, you're on.
I think in the 50s there was a theory of everything which predicted the Higgs boson, and they came up with four basic causes of energy. One of them was gravity. Was that Newton's idea of gravity, Einstein's, or does it make any difference?
Well, it makes a difference, but you're right. Gravity, of the four fundamental forces, gravity remains the most mysterious. Now, as you well know, because of the way you phrased the question, Newton regarded it as a force that depends on the mass of a body and varies with the distance between the bodies. Einstein said, no, this has to do with the bending of space-time. It's geometry, really. Gravity is just the result of the warping of space-time. So by that thinking, the sun, which is a massive object, weighs the same as 333,000 Earths, has warped the space in its vicinity so that the Earth, falling in just the straightest, laziest path through this warped space, winds up returning to our starting point after a year just because we're going in a straight line through warp space. But you know what the truth is? Whether you think of it as mass distortion or space-time distortion, it's still mysterious because we still don't know. These are only descriptions of how it behaves and theories of what's causing it, but we still don't know about it. It's still considered the most mysterious of those four fundamental forces. So we still don't know.
So it's really a description of an effect rather than the cause or what's going on.
Beautifully said. Yes. You just said that beautifully. Yes.
All right, Barry, thank you very much. Very quickly, now we only have about a minute here. Let's go to Chris in Harlemville, New York. Chris, you're on.
Hey, I just wanted to say we already made our reservations. We're going down to Charleston.
All right.
And the last eclipse we had, I was on Long Island, and we had an overcast day, but it actually shone through the clouds, It's like you get that white disk in the sky when you see look up through the clouds and the sun is there. It was actually pretty remarkable.
Yes, well, we have not had a total eclipse on Long Island since January 24th, 1925. So I don't know the one you're talking
about.
So
this might have been a partial.
It was a partial.
It was nearly an entire parcel. It was many years ago.
We had a very deep one in 1970, in the spring of 70 in Long Island.
That could probably be the one I saw.
All right. Hey, Chris, we're out of time here, but thank you very much for the call. Bob Berman, wonderful job. Once again, the new book is Zapped.
The Curious History of Invisible Light, something like that.
Yeah? Silent Helper, is that correct?
From infrared to X-rays, The Curious History of Invisible Light.
He knows the title of his own book. That's very impressive. Bob Berman, great job, old boy, and thank you. And we're not sure if you'll be on again before the next eclipse.
Oh, I hope I am.
But in the meantime, if we don't see you, travel safe. I hope you have clear skies.
I'm so encouraged about the callers, Ray, who are going.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff.
Yeah.
And we will, of course, have a good a debrief on that once it happens. Support comes from Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival, presenting Rabbi Cantor Kenneth Blatt and concert pianist Judith Solomon, performing the songs and compositions created by Jewish composer George Gershwin, July 9th at Congregation Shara Tefila, saratogajewishculturalfestival.org for details. The Discovery Center, presenting July programs featuring guided Carner Blue butterfly walks and exploration into the worlds of the turtles and pond life, albanypinebush.org. Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. Edith-Hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. And Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. Thanks again to Bob Berman for stopping by today. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. And your phones were answered by Tony Geloso. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. Thank you for listening and for all the great calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we'll be screaming for ice cream. The good folks from SoCo Creamery in the Berkshires will be here. Oh, boy. And right now, though, stand by for news.